mornings, I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today, Findlay City School Superintendent Andy Hatton discusses the high-stakes town hall coming up this week ahead of May's critical levy vote. Also this morning, tax season is in full swing, and even though the deadline is still weeks away, April 15th will be here before you know it. But there's no need to panic with modern tools to make the whole process easier. And happening around town, members of the cast will join us to preview the Fort Findlay Playhouse production of the cat-and-mouse thriller Perfect Crime. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Monday, February 24th, 2025. So today is the day, apparently, that Vivek Ramaswamy will officially launch his campaign for the governor, for the governor's office. Wants to be Ohio governor, and the story says later on today, the announcement will be happening at the CTL Aerospace facility near Cincinnati. The entrepreneur and one-time presidential candidate, a native of Cincinnati, currently lives in the Columbus area. He will be apparently making more than just the one appearance, officially announcing his candidacy, and it'll be barnstorming the state. He'll be facing Ohio Attorney General Dave Yost and Heather Hill, who is a former school board president and business owner from Morgan County, will be his competition in the Republican primary. Looking to take over the office from term-limited GOP Governor Mike DeWine. On the other side, former Ohio Department of Health Director Dr. Amy Acton is the only Democrat who has announced a campaign for the office thus far. And to say that she is a long shot is probably an understatement, but she's in the race nonetheless. So Vivek Ramaswamy going to be making his long-awaited announcement, making it official today, apparently, and he will immediately become the front runner for the job. So that is the big story. Here is the latest update on this asteroid, 2024 YR4. We've been following this for over a month now. As the doom and gloom story of the new year. It seems like there's always a doom and gloom, we're all going to die, the world is coming to an end story. And this one keeps popping up, but there is some good news. You remember when we first announced, or when we first had the story about the announcement of this asteroid that possibly could hit Earth, they said it's got a 1% chance of hitting the planet, of striking the planet in late 2032. And then they updated that and said it's got a 2% chance. And then, a couple of weeks ago, a 3% chance. So they keep updating the likelihood of this asteroid 2024 YR4 of striking Earth, and it keeps getting more and more likely. Well, astronomers now at the University of Hawaii have another new update on this asteroid. This update says it is less likely to hit the planet than previously thought. Let's see. Story goes on to say the asteroid was first spotted by the telescopes at Mauna Kea in Hawaii back in December, and initial calculations predicted a 3% chance to impact the planet in December of 2032. So initially they thought 1%, then 2%, then they updated it to 3%, and new observations now have dropped the probability from 3% back down to less than 1%. So, and by the way, if this seems like much ado about nothing, I mean, at best, it's got a 3% chance. Keep in mind that the scientists say that most objects in outer space have a 0% chance of impacting Earth. So a 3%, a 2%, or even a 1% chance is something to make note of. So, and it's about the size of a football field. They say if it hits Earth in a populated area, it could wipe out a city. But more than likely, it's not going to hit Earth. And even if it does, it probably won't hit anywhere populated and will not be that big of a deal. But there's always a chance. So you still want to be worried about this. Apparently, we still have to be worried, even though it's less than 1% is the latest update. Why don't they just come out and say, we don't know. We just have no idea what the likelihood is, you know? They really should do. A couple of other items here among the first things that you need to know, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. Speaking of science, there are early trials of a new weight loss drug, which show results so good that doctors are telling their patients to eat more. That's right. This weight loss drug is so effective that people are losing too much weight. They need to eat more. This is called retatrutide, R-E-T-A-T-R-U-T-I-D-E. It appears to be, it's an injection. It is twice as effective, or appears to be twice as effective as Ozempic and these GLP-1 miracle drugs that have been all the rage since they have been introduced, since they've been on the market. Some trial participants in this new trial claim that they have lost too much weight. There are, in fact, scientists say, potential negative side effects. One participant dropped out due to kidney stones, although it's unclear if the injection itself caused the kidney issue. So they're going to have to research that and find out. Apparently, this drug differs from Ozempic and the GLP-1s because GLP-1s target one hormone, I guess, hence the name. Mounjaro takes aim at two. That's another big weight loss drug that has hit the market. Now, this one actually targets three different hormones. And one trial participant claims his doctor told him to start eating more to avoid losing too much weight. The patient said, I go to my doctor's visits, and the doc is like, make sure you eat as much as you can. So if that's true, I mean, if you've got a weight loss drug that allows you to eat as much as you can, that would be a true breakthrough. So stay tuned. It's the latest scientific discovery here. This is big news if you are a fan of ebooks, digital readers. If you read your books on your computer, take note that 2 days from now, February 26th, Amazon will remove the ability to save your ebooks on your computer. You're not going to be able to save your ebooks on your computer anymore. And once this feature is gone, the only way that you can read your ebooks is through your Kindle. Once the feature is done, Kindle ebooks can only be transferred to Kindle devices or to the Amazon app, the Kindle app, or Kindle for web via an internet connection. So if you use other e-readers or you download books in PDF form or something like that, you might want to back up your library while you can. You've got a couple of days to do this, February 26th. To download your Kindle books, visit your content library, pick the book you want to download, select the More Actions option, and then click on Download and Transfer via USB. And that would be the only way, and you need to do this by February 26th. So I'll point this out. If you don't have a Kindle, but you do have electronic books you want to save, need to get that done. So highlight that. And maybe the best news of the day. This is, I think, possibly the top story. The one that everyone will want to know about here this morning. The U.S. Postal Service is going to be honoring Betty White, the legendary Betty White, with a new stamp, a new forever stamp commemorating the late actress and comedian's warmth, wit, and charisma. According to a press release on Thursday from the Postal Service, the new stamp features Betty White in a purple polka-dotted blouse, against a violet colored background, with her name in white text underneath her portrait and Forever USA printed below her name in violet text. A new Betty White Forever stamp is coming. The Postal Service will host a special event March 27th to unveil the new stamp at the L.A. Zoo and Botanical Gardens, where Betty White was a trustee, benefactor, and volunteer. So, certainly very appropriate. But that has got to be the best news of the day, Betty White getting her own forever stamp. I can think of few people who would be more deserving than Betty White. There you go. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Monday morning started.
This is ONN. I'm Jay Fox on the Ohio News Network. A new law set to take effect tomorrow is already causing a reaction at one Southwest Ohio university. ONN's Jared Allen explains.
Some students at the University of Cincinnati are upset about new signs posted outside restrooms on campus. WKRC reports the signs read biological men and biological women. Some were torn down, others were covered with notes. Ohio's new Protect All Students Act requires all colleges and universities in Ohio to use specific language when labeling restrooms, changing rooms, and shower rooms.
The Ohio Department of Health has reported the first pediatric flu death of 2025. Bryn Caswell with ONN affiliate WBNS-TV in Columbus has more.
The case is out of Allen County near Lima. ODH says there have been more than 9,000 flu-related hospitalizations this season, which is well above average. The state typically reports between 1 and 6 pediatric flu deaths a season. In a statement, the director of the Department of Health urges parents to protect their kids and have them get the flu vaccine. He also urges good hand hygiene and staying home if you are sick.
Despite being without guard Darius Garland, the Cleveland Cavaliers beat the Memphis Grizzlies 129-123 last night to improve their record to 47-10 on the season. The Cavs play the Magic in Orlando tomorrow at 7:30 p.m. For the Ohio News Network, I'm Jay Fox.
Now, our cover story this morning, Findlay City Schools Superintendent Andy Hatton is with us this morning ahead of their high-stakes town hall that is coming up this week ahead of May's critical levy vote. Mr. Hatton, thanks very much for taking the time. First of all, we appreciate it.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
So, we've talked about this before. There's a lot at stake at the in the May election, so obviously a lot at stake for this town hall on Wednesday evening.
Yeah, we're really looking forward to it. And again, thanks for having me on today. It's going to be on Wednesday the 26th at 6 p.m. at Glenwood Middle School. And we wanted to open up a forum for the public to ask questions and get answers from myself and from the treasurer and a couple board members.
What are some of the questions that you have been asked? I mean, I know that you've been asked a number of questions even before this town hall, but what do you anticipate being the top issues that will come up during this event?
Well, one of the things that we hope to do is do town halls moving forward just to, you know, we serve the public, we serve children here in this great community, and so we want to keep these going into the future. The topic this time, of course, is our district finances, and we anticipate getting questions around, you know, how does school funding work? What are the three different buckets of school funding? You know, help us understand, you know, it's been 20 years since we've had a cost of living increase with our operating dollars, but, you know, there's also confusion out there about, well, property values have gone up and, you know, some people's taxes go up on those properties and some go down. And so it's just explaining how House Bill 920 works here in the state of Ohio. I think we'll get a lot of that. I think we'll get a lot of the cuts that are looming in going into the next school year and just, you know, how we appropriate these operating dollars.
Yeah, the funding issue is really complex. How challenging is that to break it down in a way that average folks can understand and appreciate?
Well, it has been challenging, you know, because it when people vote on property tax and then they see that their property values go up, mm-hmm. you know, here in Findlay, property values have gone up over the last 20 years, about an average of 2.3% per year. And so, you know, that is difficult to understand, that as property values go up, our collection rates actually go down as a school system, so that we're held at that flat amount of what the voters approved back in 2004. So those are the challenges, you know, and that's why we want to do this. We want the public to come in and have their questions answered.
The other question that I'm curious, it would be interesting to see on Wednesday. You have said that the cuts that have been previously announced will take effect next school year, regardless of whether this levy passes because of the lag in collections. But even further, you've said that some of those cuts will likely be permanent. Is there some concern that may sour people on voting for the levy, knowing that even if they approve the levy, some of these things that have been cut and may impact them or their students might not be coming back anyway?
Yeah, that's one of the things that we anticipate talking about with our constituents on Wednesday. You know, back in November, the 1% earned income tax that was on the ballot was meant to maintain the current level of services as we were facing that, you know, $12.7 million deficit. So now we're in a different position. If we pass in May, voting day is May 6th, and if we pass in May, we won't be able to collect on that 1% earned income until April of 2026. So that means going into next year, we do have to make that $6 million in cuts. I know that the Board of Education is going to start taking those up periodically in small chunks in March, April, May, and into June. They are going to do everything they can to hold on to what we are able to. But quite frankly, we do have to live with right around that $6 million in cuts for 1 year.
As we mentioned, this is a high-stakes vote. Already we're looking at, as we said, $6 million in cuts. What does the future look like if this doesn't pass in May?
Well, so we are very optimistic in May. People have been asking great questions and getting the clarifications they need around the, you know, why we're asking for this support for our operating budget. I don't want to speak for the Board of Education, but I believe that we would probably have to be right back on the ballot in November. If we're unsuccessful here in the year 2025, we would be looking at another $4 to $6 million in cuts going into the fall of 26. Again, I'm optimistic about this. And one thing that you said a moment ago was, would there be some cuts that would be permanent moving forward? I don't think that sours voters. I think that one of the things we hear from voters is, you know, did you listen to us, you know, when we lost in November? Are we living within our means? And we do think that we can make some cuts moving forward around about $1 million to make sure that we are being as prudent as we can with our operating tax dollars.
So this this town hall on Wednesday will not be just yourself speaking to voters, but others as well. Who's going to be involved and give us more information about the town hall event itself?
Yeah, when, you know, people can get their questions in now. We've been receiving some questions for a few days, and when folks arrive, they're going to be greeted and taken to a seat, and they're going to have an index card, like a 4x6, and they'll be able to write their questions down, and we are going to project all questions up in front of everyone, as long as they have to do with district finances. And then it'll be myself up front, along with our treasurer, Pam Harrington, board president, Matt Cooper, and board member, Susan Russell.
You have framed this, many within the community in support of this levy have framed this as not just critical for the future of the Findlay City Schools, but for the community as a whole.
Yeah, we've talked to a lot of people that are very interested in, you know, supporting the schools. But you're right, Chris, this is a moment where our community is kind of at a crossroads. You know, as I've said before on your program, I believe that public education is the backbone of our community, of any community, of our state, and of our country. And, you know, economic viability is very important to the city of Findlay. We're a top, you know, number one micropolitan in the country year after year. And a strong education for the children that live here is vital to that, along with property values. The Realtors Association put something out about the, you know, the connection between strong schools and property values. So it is a community decision here at these crossroads.
I'm curious, given the fact that, like we said, we know that there are cuts that are coming for the next school year, and with the looming uncertainty about the May vote, I know obviously you want to be optimistic, you want to project an optimistic tone, but I'm wondering, what is the mood within the Findlay City Schools? So the staff that you have talked with, what are they going through right now, given all of the uncertainty that, just the reality of the situation?
Yeah, it's very challenging right now, Chris. I went out to meet with every staff about a week ago. It was just over 2 weeks ago, made the rounds and met with every staff on all of our campuses from the preschool all the way to the high school, including Millstream, and connected with them, talked to them about our process and all the conversations that need to take place. You know, we're not only being transparent with our community, but we really value being transparent with our team. And we believe and strengthen our team. And I am very proud of our staff because the kids this year are having their lived experience in each grade level. And our teachers and our entire staff are doing an amazing job of showing up every day to make sure they're doing the best for our kids.
Again, the Findlay City Schools Town Hall on the topic of finances and the upcoming May levy happening on Wednesday, 6 p.m. at Glenwood Middle School. We're still several weeks out, obviously, from the May election. Is this the only town hall that there will be on this topic, or are you planning others as well?
Well, we're going to see how this goes, and then after this, I'm going to be engaging with Pam Harrington on like open office hours. I've already done some what we're calling fireside chats in people's homes, and just getting as much voter engagement as we can to share the facts. And then we might put another one of these together perhaps in late March, early April, before early voting starts. And again, this is hopefully a format to be open with our constituents that we do moving forward into the coming years.
We have a link on our webpage for more information about the town hall and how you can submit questions if there are issues that you would like to see and hear addressed. You can go to goodmornings.net for that. And again, Findlay City School Superintendent Andy Hatton with us this morning. Thanks very much for taking the time. As always, we appreciate it.
And as always, thank you.
Of course, tax season is officially in full swing now, and joining us this morning is Intuit Credit Karma's consumer financial advocate, Courtney Alev, with some help on navigating tax season, from maximizing your refund to tools you can use to file. Of course, Courtney, we can file at any time now, but you don't want to rush through it just to get it done and over with. What do consumers need to do to prepare ahead of either April 15th or whenever they decide to file?
Yeah, we know that the tax season can be really stressful for people. In fact, nearly one in three American taxpayers says the idea of even filing their taxes makes them want to cry. And we know that so many people are actually procrastinating even getting started on their taxes because they're scared to figure out how much they owe. And so if that's you, you are not alone. But I'm here to tell you it's time to stop procrastinating. And what you really want to do to start preparing yourself is to get organized and make a plan. Grab that W-2, grab those tax forms you might be receiving in the mail, any receipts you might need. Stack them all in one safe place on your desk, or put those electronic copies in a folder in your email inbox. Because that way, once you are ready to sit down and file, you're going to have everything you need and not be on a frantic chase to find all of those forms.
Yeah.
And it's important to remember that if you're expecting a tax refund, the earlier you file, the earlier you're going to get your hands on that money.
Yeah, certainly very important. What if we are not able to meet the April 15th deadline? I know it seems like it's a long way off now, but it sure is shooting. It's going to be here before you know it. So what if someone isn't able to meet the deadline?
Yeah, that is a constant. I feel like April 15th always shows up a lot earlier than people think. And if that's you, you're already worried about it, I have good news. You can apply for an extension with the IRS. You just want to make sure to do that before April 15th. And an important note there, if you are getting an extension, you would in that case have until October 15th to file, But you would still owe a payment on any estimated taxes due by April 15th. So just be sure to keep that in mind. And one last note on extensions. If you or someone you know lives in an area that's been impacted by natural disasters, which we've unfortunately had many in the last year, you may actually already qualify for an extension. And you can visit the IRS website for more information.
Speaking of which, is there any way of knowing whether you are going to have to pay in or whether you are likely to get a refund ahead of filling out all the forms and submitting your return? I mean, again, if you're going to file for an extension, you need to pay your estimated tax beforehand. But how do you know what that estimated tax would be?
Yeah, it's something that a lot of people aren't aware of, but it can really save you a lot of stress this tax season. So there are a lot of free online tools, such as through Credit Karma or TurboTax, that can help you estimate either are you going to get a refund or owe a bill this year, and how big is that refund going to be, or how big is that bill going to be? And then with that information, you can make a plan either for how you're going to use that refund to really make financial progress, or how you're going to pay that bill. And even if you're not ready to sit down and file your taxes completely, it's a great idea to spend a few minutes doing this and getting an estimate, because that can help you avoid some pretty unpleasant surprises.
Yeah.
If you, for example, don't realize you're going to owe a big bill until you actually sit down and do your taxes.
A couple of points on that. First of all, obviously, there are a lot of filing tools and options available. How do we find the best option for our particular situation?
There are a ton of tools available, and I know it can be really overwhelming to decide where and how you want to do your taxes, but the good news is that whatever you want, there's going to be a good option for you. So, for example, if you like doing taxes on your own, you feel confident doing that, there's plenty of options that help you just kind of get it all done by yourself.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're one of the many Americans who doesn't feel confident necessarily in doing it all by themselves, you can also get some help along the way. So, for example, if you're filing with Credit Karma or TurboTax, they can match you with a qualified tax expert no matter what your personal financial or tax situation is. And you can choose if you either want help along the way or just to answer some specific questions, or if you really want to hand it off completely to an expert. All of these type of options are available based on what you feel most comfortable with. But regardless of what you choose, it's important to remember that there are free filing options available to you online.
Yeah. And by the way, just as a sidebar, and I mentioned it before, one of the nice things about the online tools, if you are going to tackle it yourself, you can break it down into bite-sized bits. It'll save your progress, and you don't have to sit down for an entire day and do it. You can, you know, work on it for a little while here and then come back, you know, the next week and, you know, what have you. So that makes it real easy as well. And as you were alluding to, obviously, you know, a lot of us are going to expect refunds, and our minds start thinking about what we're going to do with that. What should we be thinking about when it comes to our tax refunds?
Like you said, the refund is so top of mind for many Americans. We know that 37% of people actually depend on it to make ends meet. And so it is a very big deal and an important moment. And the number one thing I would recommend is that people make a plan for the refund. It is so easy for that refund to burn a hole in your pocket,
right?
Especially if you're living paycheck to paycheck. It's such a nice opportunity to splurge or treat yourself. But there's also this opportunity to really get your year off to a better financial start. So my rule of thumb is to earmark 10% of the refund, maybe 20% maximum, towards either something fun or treating yourself or your family to an experience, but then put the rest of that refund towards your financial goals. And that will look different for different people, but two very popular examples would be either using it to pay off all or some of the credit card debt you may be carrying after the holidays, and that could save you a lot of money that you might be paying on interest fees.
Mm-hmm.
Or you could put it into an emergency fund or a savings account and really help you build that cash cushion against life's more unexpected expenses. And so the number one piece of advice I have is just to make a plan for it. It's fine to treat yourself a little. Life is short. We all deserve that. But making sure that you're taking advantage of that refund to really make progress on your financial goals.
What is the biggest mistake that people make when doing their taxes?
The biggest mistakes are really the simplest and most common ones. It's misspelling your name, putting a digit wrong in your social security number, doing the wrong math. There's so much data, it can be easy to make a mistake. But the great news here is that tax online tools and software really eliminate or reduce the chances of you making those errors. Yeah. They will do the math for you. They'll flag if it looks like maybe you made an error somewhere, or let you know if you're missing something and there might be just some missing information. And if you're using Credit Karma or TurboTax, you can even just snap a picture of your tax documents and it will grab that data and pre-fill it into your tax return. So you don't need to input every single number or every single box yourself. And so these type of tools will just make you feel more confident and reduce the chances for you making a mistake, which are very human and easy to make if you're doing everything manually.
True story. Back before the age of online taxes, when you had to actually fill out the paper forms, I've done that. And you get that letter in the mail from the IRS. That is a heart-stopping moment. So...
Want to eliminate that. No one wants that. So hopefully you can avoid it.
Intuit, Credit Karma, consumer financial advocate, Courtney Alev with us this morning. Where do we get more information, Courtney?
You can download the Credit Karma app or check out creditkarma.com.
Courtney, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.
This is Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
We interrupt this program to bring you a broken news alert.
Okay, so this is one of the most unusual thefts that we have ever had in the broken news. And it comes from France. So from the International File, where thieves used a stolen credit card to buy a lottery ticket that ended up being worth $500,000. That really creates a bit of a conundrum, doesn't it? I mean, they bought the lottery tickets worth $500,000. It was a winning lottery ticket, but they bought it with a stolen credit card. So what do you do? It says here, since the thieves faced being arrested, they have not come forward to claim the prize. They didn't really think that one through. I mean, that's the downside. If you buy a lottery ticket with a stolen credit card and then you win, what do you do? What do you do? The victim has proposed a solution for the robbers. He says they can split the cash and return his wallet, and he will withdraw. He won't press charges if they they return the wallet and split the prize money. He won't press charges. Jean David's lawyer says, "You risk nothing. We will share it with you." He said on Thursday, and you would be able to change your life and turn away from a life of crime. It does seem like a reasonable solution. It's going to be one of the most unusual thefts I've ever heard. That's wild. Elsewhere in the broken news, speaking of thefts, a couple in North Hollywood, California is facing charges on suspicion of going on a 2-week-long armed robbery spree across Los Angeles and Orange counties. Federal prosecutors say Antonio Bland and Abigail Lucky robbed 12 stores in January and February of last year. Before they were arrested, prosecutors say the couple also took a quick break in between robberies to go to Las Vegas to get married. And took a quick time out, little road trip to Vegas, and got hitched. An alleged accomplice is also facing charges, 23-year-old man from Long Beach. The robberies took place at 7-Eleven stores, donut shops, and a smoke shop. I just thought it was funny they took a break midway through their crime spree to go get married. Well, true love doesn't wait. Police in Fort Myers, Florida are looking for a woman who is accused of breaking into a beauty store and stealing $2,000 worth of wigs and hair extensions. According to Crime Stoppers there in Fort Myers, Ivornia Bryant is her name, had already been arrested for the alleged break-in, but recently violated the terms of a house arrest order. So she is now on the lam, and they are looking to re-arrest her. Detectives say she may be traveling under an alias and probably a disguise. She's probably wearing a wig. She broke into a wig shop. She's probably wearing a wig. Let's see what else is going on. Now, this is a crazy story. I don't know if you heard about this. A woman in Georgia, Christina Murray, is suing her IVF clinic for implanting the wrong embryo into her uterus. They implanted the wrong embryo. And she knows that because when she gave birth, the child was a completely different ethnicity. The child was African-American, and she is not. So you know that there's been a mistake made somewhere along the line. Even despite the clinic's mistake, Ms. Murray and her husband actually wanted to keep the baby. The couple raised him for several months until his biological parents were given custody by the courts. Now she is suing Coastal Fertility Specialists. The clinic says in a statement, "This was an isolated event with no further patients affected. We immediately conducted an in-depth review and put additional safeguards in place to further protect patients and to ensure that such an incident does not happen again." But I don't know if that makes her feel any better. Yeah, that is that would be a shocker, wouldn't it? You give birth to a baby and it's definitely not your own embryo. Yeah. And a couple of other items here in the broken news, the odd and unusual side of the headlines. This is a story from the Associated Press. An escaped Scottish Highland bull has been taking in the sights of New Milford, Connecticut, as it continues to evade being returned to its former home. This has been going on for over a month now in New Milford, Connecticut. People keep spotting this Scottish Highland bull. And apparently the people who are spotting it aren't realizing that people are looking for this animal, according to local animal control officers. If someone calls about a sighting, they've been telling the owner, and the owner has been doing their best to go out and wrangle up the Scottish Highland bull. But it's hard because you know, with the weather and all of that, and obviously the animal is very scared. I just thought this story popped up. Isn't this the same community that had the baby seal that was wandering into the streets they had to rescue? What is going on in Connecticut with these these animals on the loose? What is going on? Seems like the animals are taking over in New Milford, Connecticut. Weird. And finally, in the broken news this morning, I love this. You remember MapQuest? Before we had Google Maps and GPS and all of that, we had MapQuest online. It was one of the first mapping services on the World Wide Web, but you had to put in your destination in advance and then print out the directions, right? You remember MapQuest years and years ago. Well, believe it or not, MapQuest is still around. It still exists. And now they have come up with an idea that I think is maybe I think this is a unique idea, a great compromise in the controversy over the naming of the Gulf of Mexico / Gulf of America. Apparently, they will now let you rename that body of water whatever you like. You can call it the Gulf of America. You can call it the Gulf of Mexico. You can give it your own name. All you have to do is visit their website at gulfof.mapquest.com to name your own gulf. That's a great idea. You're going to name your own Gulf. Why not? And call it whatever we like. Your new MapQuest. There you go. That is today's Broken News Report. Who knew that MapQuest even still existed? An update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. Today's Broken News Report. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
Your home for Cleveland Guardians baseball is WFIN.
Swung on, hit high, hit deep to left. There she goes! A walk-off, two-run home run by David Fry.
Hear a select schedule of spring training games, all leading up to the season opener on Thursday, March 27th at Kansas City. Your home of the Guardians is 1330 WFIN and 95.5 FM.
Time now for your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. So you think you're pretty smart. Well, how smart are you? Do you really know? In a recent YouGov poll, nearly 4,000 adults were asked, have you ever taken an IQ test? And I thought this was really telling. 40% of those in the survey, 4,000 U.S. adults, 40% said that they had, in fact, taken an IQ test. 45% said that they have not. They have never taken an IQ test. And 14% weren't sure. Well, I'm here to tell you, if you're not sure, you probably haven't. It's not something that you would really forget, I wouldn't think. So, anyway, not sure. I have not taken an IQ test myself, so I can't say with any certainty just how smart that I have. But then they asked, how well do you think IQ tests actually measure a person's overall intelligence? And only 12% said that they felt that an IQ test was a very accurate measure of a person's overall intelligence. 12% said it measures this very well. 50% said probably somewhat well. 16% said that they thought IQ tests are not very good at measuring a person's overall intelligence. And 4% said that they are not any good at all. They're not any good at all. They followed that up with the question, if someone frequently mentions, and everybody knows someone like this, right? If someone frequently mentions their high IQ score, if somebody's constantly bringing this up, does that make you respect them more, respect them less, or does it not have any impact on your opinion of that person? If someone frequently mentions their high IQ score, only 8%. And maybe if you are one of these people who constantly brings it up, you should know only 8% will respect you more the more often you bring up your high IQ. 30% actually say that they would respect a person less the more they bring up their IQ. And 51% said it does not change their opinion one way or the other, probably because they don't think very much of you to begin with, is my guess. Kind of interesting there. YouGov survey of 4,000 U.S. adults. So, happening around town, it is time for another production from the Fort Finley Playhouse. This time up, the cat and mouse thriller, Perfect Crime. Members of the cast, Nancy Gordon, George Russmeyer, are with us this morning, along with director David Wright. Guys, thanks very much for dropping by. We appreciate it. Got a house full here today. Nancy, you are actually new to the Fort Finley Playhouse, I am told. Yeah. So this is your first foray into community theater, or just here?
Just here. I've done community theater before, but this is my first time at the Fort Finley Playhouse.
Very cool.
From afar, this is the one.
Very cool. And we were talking a little bit before we went on the air. You've actually lassoed in your entire family to be a part of this.
Yeah, so. we there wasn't enough male actors. And I said, you know, I have like three at home, and I brought everybody in.
I wonder, how often does that happen that you end up with, you know, like entire, this becomes a family affair?
Oh, it happens often.
Yeah.
Where we, you know, bring in husbands and, you know, and brothers yeah. end up showing up and yeah. things of that nature, which is really great.
One of the
new families that are at least three generations in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's one of the cool things about it is that it's something that, you know, we look for things that the whole family can do together, mm-hmm. and quite often this becomes one of them. So, yeah. So tell us a little bit about this this show, Perfect Crime.
Oh, well, Perfect Crime is you know, is definitely a cat and mouse murder mystery,
mm-hmm.
And it takes place on the East Coast in Connecticut, and it is it's got twists and turns. Will keep you on the edge of your seat, and it also will make you go, huh?
Hmm.
What did I miss something?
Mm-hmm.
And the cast is absolutely wonderful, but it's takes place in Connecticut, as I stated. And there's really, you know, everybody in the cast is an integral part of the murder mystery, which is absolutely mm-hmm. outstanding.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of, like I said, a lot of twists and turns. There's a psychiatrist, a retired psychiatrist,
mm-hmm.
and a patient. You have to throw a patient in there.
Right.
But then there's the supporting people that get yeah. involved, and the inspector.
And everybody is a part of this. Does that mean everybody is a suspect in this?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Except for the inspector. You know,
okay.
He's, well, yeah. But it could be a twist.
Maybe not. Is it tough when you have a mystery like this? Is it difficult to begin? Obviously, you know how the whole thing ends. To not give away or not telegraph those clues that, you know, like David was mentioning, you know, there are subtle clues throughout the show, but you don't want to be too incredibly obvious about them, right?
No, I think the play is written and set up that. I don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah.
And by the way, it took me at least three readings before I figured it out. And I had the script in front of me. So,
I think we're still figuring it out. Every time we run it, we have more questions, more answers.
Yeah.
And those answers lead to more questions. And we're like, how?
So it becomes kind of fun in the way you lean into the characters.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, knowing how all of it comes together being the mystery component.
Yeah, and I think everybody who watches it might have their own interpretation of how it ends or how it started or, you know, who did what. So
okay.
That's going to be fun kind of hearing, like, what they think.
Yeah, why was it done? You know, why was this person involved? You know, what spurred the the move towards going yeah. down the dark path,
yeah,
that type of thing.
Because I always wonder. I mean, every different type of production brings its own interesting dynamics mm-hmm. in staging it. I mean, this is obviously different than a musical would be or a comedy would be. So you have to approach it a little bit differently.
Absolutely.
To do it well.
And things to consider too. To let the audience know as well, that's going to come and attend. You know, there's gunfire on stage.
Okay.
You know, which can be loud in our little theater.
Okay.
And then there's also some, you know, touchy things, you know, because it is a murder mystery.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also some touchy things in regards to, you know, maybe, it, you know, touches on suicide. It touches on some of these other
okay.
things. So
all right.
Makes everybody aware.
Yeah. Interesting topics here. The show is called Perfect Crime. So give us all of the details here. When
you want a spoiler.
Yeah. No.
When and where?
All of the particulars about the show, the key dates and such.
We're running March 6th through the 9th.
Okay.
That's a Thursday through a Sunday. And then the following Friday through Sunday, 14th through the 16th.
Okay.
And to get tickets, they're available right now to the public. You can go to FortFinleyPlayhouse.org/tickets to get them online. Or today only, you can call us at 567-525-3636 from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. And we'll have a person at the Playhouse physically today from noon to 3 p.m., and that's at 300 West Sandusky Street.
Okay. All right. Very good. And I, we'd be remiss, and we always talk about when we have you folks from the Playhouse Inn, again, and Nancy, you can attest, always looking for new folks to come in and be a part of the Playhouse, whether it's on stage or behind the scenes.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Everyone is so kind, and they've been so welcoming. It's been such a fantastic adventure, honestly.
So what is still to come this season? By
we
the way.
Have 9 to 5 the musical coming up in May.
Okay. All right. Everybody's familiar with that show, so that should be an awful lot of fun.
And there's auditions for that show on March 17th and 18th at the Playhouse at 7 p.m.
All right. So you can circle that on the calendar. But again, tickets for Perfect Crime on sale now, right?
Yes, indeed.
And the show dates again are?
March 6th through the 9th and 14th through the 16th.
Okay, we look forward to it. Should be an awful lot of fun. And this is more, it sounds like this is more geared to an adult audience.
Yes, yes, absolutely. So just, it's a date night waiting to happen is what it is for everybody.
Okay.
Get a sitter and come to the show.
Murder mystery. I'm not sure. You have to be very comfortable with your date to take her to a murder mystery. Otherwise,
exactly,
you might be asking for trouble right there. We've got a link on our webpage for more information. And again, Nancy Gordon and George Russmeyer with us from the cast and director David Wright, Perfect Crime at the Fort Finley Playhouse. Guys, thanks very much for dropping by.
Thanks, Chris.
And that will finish up our podcast for today. I want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program this morning. Remember, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the show at our webpage, and that, of course, is goodmornings.net. Coming up tomorrow on the program, homelessness in America has increased 18% year over year, but there are some encouraging storylines. What's driving the problem, what's working, and what's not to address it. So until tomorrow morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day. We'll catch you back here tomorrow.